Thanks for listening to this week's Wellspring Church Podcast.
All right, we are starting a brand new series today. It's called Elevate, and it's about worship. And worship is not a word we use very often, right? It's an odd-sounding word, which is interesting because we all worship every day. We all do it every single day, but we don't talk about it a whole lot. Now, if you are like me and have a church background, then you probably think worship is an event. You might even say you've come to worship right now, right? That's what we did. We went to a worship service. If you went to an edgy church, it was in a worship center. The church I grew up in, it was called the Sanctuary, right? That's where you went to worship. This we call a gym. That's where we are now. Fancy. But if you don't have a church background at all, as I know many of you don't, worship is just not a word we use very often. And so what I kind of wanted to do before we even start the series is try to help you understand what worship actually means. And so, you know, what do you do when you want to define a word? You go to the dictionary. And so I did that. I went to the dictionary, and I want to read to you the way they define worship. It's sort of, I don't know what I feel about it. They define worship as a feeling or expression of reverence and adoration for a deity. That's a lot of words. But basically what it's saying is that worship is the way we feel about and respond to the gods, plural, gods in our life. Because we all have gods in our life, right? We all have things that we worship, things that we spend our time thinking about, focusing on, chasing. So the way I define worship, the way we're going to define worship for this series, just to kind of make it simpler for us to talk about and kind of get a hold on it, we're going to define it this way, that worship is our response to what we value most. All right? It's just the way we respond to what we value. And again, I say we all worship every single day. If you're a sports fan, specifically a football fan, specifically a college football fan, you saw a lot of worship yesterday. And again, I am a huge college football fan as well, and I will admit to you, I value my team winning. And the way you know I value my team winning is the response I get when they win. Or when they do things that's going to make them win, like when they score a touchdown. How do you respond if you're a sports fan when your team scores a touchdown? Like a lunatic, right? You hug people, you high-five people you've never seen before in your life. You jump up and down, you scream and holler, you raise your arms. Woo-hoo! Our sports team won! That's worship. It's a response to something that we highly value. If you're a sports fan, you know that you respond. You don't even think about it. You don't plan to hug that stranger beside you. But, especially if you're an Auburn fan, when the hand of God reaches down and touches your team on multiple occasions, you know, I've almost decided I might have to become an Auburn fan because I'm a fan of everything God's a fan of. And he is clearly a fan of those people. I've never seen anything like it in my life. Anyway, I'm not going to become an Auburn fan, by the way. Oh, but it's that involuntary response. Now, you know, some of you may not be sports fans, and I understand, but you respond as well. See, I'm a sports fan. I respond to sports, and I love them. But I'll tell you this. It all changed when I had children that played sports. I'm afraid I'm going to be one of those dads. It's horrifying. My middle son, John, he's 6 years old. He played soccer for the first time this year. He said, I just want to play soccer, Dad. Okay, sure, whatever. So we signed him up for soccer. He's amazing at it. And trust me, I wouldn't just make that up. First game, he scored like 4 goals. His highest game, I think he scored 6 goals one game. Like, it was crazy. And I'm going to be honest with you. When he scored that first goal, I mean, it was like we just won the World Cup. I mean, I was jumping up and down. I was screaming. I was hollering. I think I embarrassed him. He was like, Dad, calm down. And that's when I realized I'm one of those parents. But it was a response because I value him so much. highly, and I want my kids to succeed. I want them to do well. They've got such high value to me that I just responded when things went well. And you probably respond the same way. But maybe sports aren't your thing. Maybe you don't have kids, you know. My wife, you wouldn't know what to look at her. She worships food. She does. I know you don't, you look at her, but she does. The woman reads food blogs. Who reads a food blog? What does that even mean? She reads five of them. Because she values food. She values clean eating, and you know, I'm like, give me some Cheetos and I'm fine, but she values all that. I mean, when she makes a nice meal, she doesn't just go to one store, not even two stores. She may have to go to three and four stores. You got to go to Mr. Fish to get the fish because that's where you get the best fish. But then you got to go over here, and good night. When Fresh Market opened here, you'd have thought Jesus himself had come back. She values that. See, that's how you can tell what you worship. You can identify what you worship by what you spend your time and your energy thinking about. What are you emotionally invested in? What produces the strongest responses in you? What do you think? What do you spend time thinking about? What is it you want to do? See, those are indications of what you value. And the way you respond to those things is your worship. Do we all worship? We all worship many, many, many things. You can worship fitness. Clearly, I do not. You can worship money. You can worship your career. You can worship the stuff that comes from your career that produces the money to buy the stuff. You can worship other people. Did you know that? Your life can be controlled by how other people see you and view you and think about you. And if they think highly of you, oh, well, you're happy. And you respond in happiness. And if they think poorly of you, well, you immediately react and respond and try to change so they will like you. We all worship many, many things. We're all living our lives responding to many, many, many things. Now, let me let you off the hook, because if some of you grew up in church, you probably think what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to spend the next 30 minutes making you feel horrible because you like all those things, right? Well, go ahead and let it have a deep breath. Go, phew, because that ain't happening, right? The goal of this series is not to try to tell you you shouldn't get excited when your team wins a sporting event. The goal is not to not get excited about when your kids do well, to not enjoy good food, to not want to work hard, to not want nice things, like none of that. That's not the point. So you can go ahead and let out a deep breath. There's not going to try to make you feel guilty here. All right? The point of this series is to give each one of us in the room today and for the next couple of weeks a chance to step back and objectively look at our lives and ask one question. Does everything here have its proper place? And is it properly valued in my life? That's all I want to ask. And you may say, well, I don't understand. What does that mean? Well, it's pretty simple. We've all had times in our lives where we've looked back and we have overvalued people, positions, careers, opportunities, relationships, sporting events, etc. We've overvalued them in our life. And the way I know you've overvalued them is because you look back and you regret all the time and all the energy and all the effort you put into it because it didn't pay off. And I'd bet every single one of you, if I asked you a question and we talked for long enough, you'd all use the same phrase. You know what? It just wasn't worth it. You know why it wasn't worth it? Because it was not actually valued as highly as you valued it in your life. It wasn't a bad thing. It didn't even do anything bad. It couldn't live up to the value you had placed on it. Because see, you had elevated it to here when it should have been here. And had it remained here, it would have been great and perfect. Nothing would have ever been wrong. But you elevated it to here. And because it had a higher value in your life responded to it more. And you worshiped it more. And it didn't pay off. Now, what if you could go through life and not have to struggle with that? This series can help you do that. So if there are things in our life that we overvalue, there must be things in our life that we undervalue, right? Friends, relationships, you all also. You look back, you have regrets. I wish I'd spent more time with so-and-so. I wish I'd worked harder on that. I wish I'd done more in that. Now, here's the problem with undervaluing things in our life. Most of the time, we don't find out we've undervalued them until it's too late to do anything about it. Spouses, you know when you find out you undervalued your spouse? When they walk out the door. Parents, you know when you find out you undervalued your children? When you watch them do the same thing to their children. So that's the scary thing about undervaluing. It's always too late when we finally realize it. And so we're going to step back in this series. We're going to say, okay, do things in my life have the proper value? And what we're going to do today to kind of start it off is I'm going to give you a secret. I'm going to give you a key. In fact, I'm going to tell you that if you will put what we're going to talk about today at the very top of your life, if you will elevate this person, mind you, to the number one place in your life, everything else will find its proper value. Now think about that. Isn't that worth it? Wouldn't it be worth it to walk through life knowing I'm not wasting my time anymore? I'm not wasting my energy. What I am putting out, what I am responding to, is in direct proportion to the actual value of this thing and what it can produce in my life. And what we're going to talk about today, the man we're going to talk about today, the reason he should be number one in your life is because no one has ever done more for you than this man has done. I mean, come on, we're at church, so you know who I'm going to talk about, right? I'm talking about Jesus Christ. And my goal today is to convince you that he has done more for you and is more worthy of your worship, more worthy of the top place in your life, more worthy of you responding in every way to him and his leading than anything else and anyone else you've ever known or ever will know, simply because of what he's done for you. What he's done for you, no one else has ever done or ever will be able to do. Now, to explain what I'm talking about, I want to turn to, as we always do, to the Bible. Because honestly, what I believe, who really cares, right? I'm just a guy up here in jeans. And some of you really struggle with that. Preacher's not supposed to wear jeans, I know. But it is what it is. But who cares what I think? We always turn to something we call the Bible. We believe that the Bible was written by different men over the course of about 2,000 or 3,000 years, and that God led those men to write these books and these stories and these poems and all these things. And we believe we can study them now. And in fact, today we're going to look at a guy named Paul. Paul, if you've been around Wellspring before, you've heard me explain who Paul is. Paul was an early church pastor. He began many of the first churches that we know about. And what Paul would do is Paul would write these churches letters. Because they didn't have email, they didn't have phones. He'd write them letters to give them instructions for how to conduct the church and how to live their lives. And what we believe is that as Paul was writing these letters, that the Spirit of God actually spoke through Paul. And that Paul was actually writing the words of God. And so now, 2,000 years after Paul wrote those letters, we can still read those letters today. And we believe that God can speak to us and give us instructions and directions for all our life through those very same letters. And we believe it not just because it says it, but because we have tasted it, and we have seen it, and we have experienced it, and it has changed us. And that's why we believe. So what we're going to do is we're going to turn to Paul today, and Paul's going to explain to us why, in the value system of our life, there is only one person who deserves the top spot. Because he has done something for us no one else has ever done or ever will be able to do. So if you have your Bibles, you can turn to the book of Ephesians. That's where we're going to be. It's the letter Paul wrote to the church at Ephesus. And in chapter 2, Paul jumps right in and he explains why it is we should value God. Now you got to take into account, this letter was written to Christians. It was written to people that believed in Jesus. Okay? One of the things I love about Wellspring is every week we have people in this room who don't believe in Jesus. So what we're going to talk about today is something that Paul writes to Christians, and it might confuse you. And in fact, there's going to come a point today where I believe you might even get offended. All right, but don't worry. I'm going to explain it all, and we're so glad you're here. But let's listen to what Paul says, and maybe even you might change your mind today and decide, yeah, I probably should put this number one in my life if he really did what Paul says he did. So let's jump in on Ephesians 2 is where we're going to be, starting in verse 1. And Paul, because he's very tactful, you know, starts out with a bang here. He says, once you were dead because of your disobedience and your many sins. Once you were dead. At least he said were dead, right? It was past tense. At least it's not now. But he says, you were dead. And obviously the first question we'd all ask is, well, if he says we were dead, why were we dead? And Paul says, because of your many sins. And if you're a Christian, you understand what that means. But if you're not a Christian, you probably say, well, what does that mean? Let me explain. A sin is anything we would do that God would not want us to do. See, we believe that God created the earth and he created a set of laws and principles that he wants us to follow. And then if we follow those laws and principles, we'll live the best life we could possibly live on this earth. But see, we don't follow God, you don't, I don't, none of us do perfectly. We all have times where we tell God, I'm smarter than you, I know more than you, I'm going to try this my own way. And when we rebel against God, when we say we're smarter than you, we commit a sin, right? We've all committed many, many, many sins. And what Paul is saying is that because of those sins, we are dead. And you may say, well, why would that be? Well, it's because God can't sin, right? God is separated from sin. In fact, God can't even be around sin. The only thing God can do when it comes to sin in the world is to destroy sin. Right? So let's go back to, I think it was like middle school geometry, right? We all learned the transitive property. A plus B. I mean, if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C, right? So let's start. So if God must destroy sin and we are sinners, God must destroy us. We were dead because of our sin. We were born this way. We were born pre-wired to rebel against God. I am in your. Even if you don't believe in God, you're still rebelling against him. And it's okay because God believes in you. And I believe one day you'll change your mind. So what does it look like to be dead in this sin? In verse 2, Paul keeps explaining. He says, you used to live in sin, just like the rest of the world, obeying the devil. There's the devil again. I hate when we have to talk about that guy. And I know some of you get real uncomfortable when we talk about the devil, because you're like, oh, really, the devil, red suit, pointy ears. He's real. He's very, very real. Let's see what he says. Obeying the devil, the commander of the powers in the unseen world, he is the spirit at work in the hearts of those who refuse to obey God. So not only are we born into sin, he's saying that we're actually born trapped and doomed to follow this guy called the devil. See, the devil is an enemy of God, and his goal is to destroy your life. And again, you may say, I don't believe in the devil. Well, let me ask you this question. Do you have moments in your life where you can look back and you, for the life of you, can't understand why you made the decision you made? And you would give anything in your life to go back and remake it, because it makes no logical sense that you made that choice. It was out of your character. No part of you would have ever done that, and you just can't fathom how you were so silly or naive, or dare I even say, in your own words, maybe you say, I can't believe I was so stupid to do that. You don't understand how it happened. Let me help you. You were tricked. And you were tricked by Satan. Because he is the power at work in the world. He is the one that convinces you, oh, just do that. No one will ever find out. He is the one that convinces you, I know everyone else shouldn't do this, but I can. I deserve it. He's the one that convinces you to overvalue things you shouldn't and to undervalue things. He is the one who is at work. So even if you don't believe in him, you can look back in your life and you can see his handiwork. And I tell you that because you need to stop beating yourself up. You need to stop feeling so guilty and feeling like you're crazy and you can't believe you did it. You didn't do it. You were tricked into doing it. The key is to identify that and to make a change so that you are no longer tricked. But here's what Paul says as he's kind of wrapping this up. He says, he's kind of explaining our situation. He says, all of us used to live that way. We were all following the passionate desires and inclinations of our sinful nature. He's saying, look, this is everybody. Everybody in this room today is either currently doing this or was doing this. We all were this way. And because of that, by our very nature, we were subject to God's anger just like everyone else. As I said, simply because we were born and existed, we were doomed to death. Now that's a lot to take in on a Sunday morning in December, right? Man, what is happening here? I thought we were just going to say Merry Christmas and love Jesus. And what is all this? It's a lot to take in, a lot to hold. Now if you're a Christ follower, you knew all that. And we go through that because I want to remind you of what your situation was before Jesus. Now, if you're in the room today, as we have all the time, and you don't believe in God, and you don't believe in Jesus, you're here because somebody invited you, and you're checking these things out, you could be a little confused right now. And very likely, you're offended. Because essentially, what I've called you is a Satan-following, walking dead person. Actually, I didn't call you that. Paul called you that. And it's important to make that distinction because Paul goes out of his way to say, we were all this way. And see, if you don't believe in God, you probably haven't studied the Bible a whole lot, so you probably don't know Paul's story. But Paul wasn't always a Christian. Paul didn't always follow Jesus. In fact, when the church first started, Paul was a religious leader in the Jewish faith, and he hated Jesus. He'd never met him, but he hated him, and he hated his church. And Paul actually spent time traveling around trying to destroy the church of Jesus Christ. Did you know that? He had people arrested. He would bust them up. Paul actually orchestrated the first execution of a Christian. He literally held the coats and approved as the men stoned a young man named Stephen for claiming to follow Jesus Christ. And then something happened that changed Paul's life forever. You know what it was? He had an encounter with Jesus. He met Jesus. And it changed his life forever. I tell you that to say this. Calling all of us walking dead people who were led by Satan, it might be offensive, but here's the truth. When you, and I say when, not if, when you have a genuine encounter with Jesus Christ, I believe it'll change your life. And see, that's actually why we do what we do here as a church. Our whole goal each week, for those of you who don't believe in God, is that you'll enjoy it just enough where you want to come back next week. Yeah, you might have gotten offended. Yeah, I don't know what I thought about all that, but it was good enough, I'll come back. Because here's what we believe. If you continue coming back, if you continue searching, if you continue seeking, eventually you are going to discover Jesus. And he alone, will change your life. And you'll discover that what we're saying today is true. And you'll give your life to him. And he will change your life forever. Because see, this isn't the end of the story. Paul goes to great lengths to explain how horrible the situation was. Or is for those of us who don't believe in Jesus. I mean, slaves to the devil. That just sounds awful. doomed to death. That just sounds awful. But the truth is, it's all our own fault. It's all because of our sin and our mistakes. We rebel. We tell God all the time, I'm smarter than you. I know more than you. You're crazy. I can figure this out. That's too old-fashioned. That doesn't apply to me. That was only for those people. We come up with all kinds of excuses and rules to essentially do whatever it is we want to do. And all those sins built up, and we were subject to God's wrath and anger, and he should have destroyed us. That's what Paul says. And then he writes two of the greatest words ever written in God's entire canon of Scripture to us. We were dead, we were doomed, but God had nothing to do with us. It was all our own fault, but God. But God is so rich in mercy, and he loved us so much that even though we were dead because of our sins, he gave us life when he raised Christ from the dead. Now see, for those unfamiliar with the story, let me explain. Yes, if you remember, God must destroy sin. We are sinners, so God must destroy us. Truth is, we're sinners, and God must destroy sin. He didn't necessarily have to destroy us. There was another way. And that's what he did. He sent his son. He sent Jesus Christ to walk on this earth, the only man ever alive who was not subject to God's wrath. He never did anything wrong. He never once stepped outside of God's plan for his life. He was holy and perfect. And at the age of 33, he was nailed to a tree. He was beaten. He was mocked. And as he looked up to the heavens and he breathed his last, he said this. He said, "It is finished." And what was finished was the punishment that you and I deserved. The wrath we had brought on. The penalty for our sin and our mistakes. Rather than punishing us, God punished his own son in our place so that we could be set free, so that we could live the life God envisioned for us, because it was not God's plan for us to rebel. We rebelled. God created us to have a relationship with us. We broke it. He fixed it. Paul goes out of his way to make sure we know that. It is only by God's grace that you have been saved. Grace is his freely and undeserved favor of love and blessing. See, God chose to do it. It was God's grace that saved us from hell. It was God's grace that saved us from a life on earth of constantly being tricked and lied to and chasing this thing and that thing and hoping beyond hope that we're finally going to find that satisfaction we've all craved. He set us free from that. His son set us free from that. And you may say, how did he do that? He explains in verse 6, says, "For he raised us from the dead." He raised us from the dead along with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms because we are united with Christ Jesus. We were dead and he raised us up. And then you may ask, how did he do that? Well, he came down from heaven. He came down to us so that he could raise us from the grave. He left majesty and perfection to come down and rescue people who didn't deserve it, who hadn't even asked for it. He came down to lift us up. Think of it like this. Next time you get on an elevator, you've all been on elevators. You know, you get in, you press the button, it goes up. That's all you think about, right? Well, the vast majority of elevators aren't actually pushing you up. A few are, but most of them aren't. Most of them actually work with a pulley system. And on one side is an elevator. There's a mechanism at the top. And on the other side is something they call a counterweight. And the counterweight is basically like steel beams or plates. And the goal is that the counterweight weighs as much as the elevator. And so then the mechanism at the top, it doesn't have to work as hard, right? And so what happens is when you get in the elevator on the bottom floor and you press up, what the mechanism actually does is it releases the counterweight. And as the counterweight comes down, it raises you up. Now, the reason I believe Jesus Christ should be number one in your life and he should have value above all else is because he and he alone is the counterweight for our sin that bought us death. And when he decided to leave heaven, when he decided to come down, he lifted us up. And he alone has the power to exclusively lift us up. Everything else in your life that you chase, everything else in life that you value, guess what? There's going to come a time where it's going to say, hey, bub, I need to come up. You need to go back down. And it's going to rely on you to pull it up. Your friends, your family, your kids, your spouse, your job, every single one of them will at some point have to let you down. They'll have to. Jesus and Jesus alone came exclusively to lift you up. So I believe our response to that amazing gesture is to elevate him to the first place in our lives and in our hearts. So today I want to simply challenge you. I want to challenge you this week. I want you to evaluate your life. I want you to evaluate your worship. I want you to evaluate how you spend your time, your energy, your resources. And hear me clearly. Don't evaluate what you wish you worshiped. Don't evaluate what you want to worship. I can tell what you worship by watching you for a week and you never have to say a word. So evaluate what you actually worship. And then ask the question, have they come to exclusively lift me up? Have they never let me down? Did they bring me back to life? Did they set me free? They could be amazing things, but I guarantee they didn't do that. Because only one came down to lift us up. So this week, just evaluate, all right? And I beg you to really do it. Just spend some time thinking. And then come back next week, and I'm going to tell you how to do it. We're going to take our next step. Jesus is worthy of first place in our lives. Next week, we're going to talk about how to live that out. How do we do that when we have jobs and we have kids and we have things to do and we have Christmas coming and we have PTA meetings and all the tourists are gone? When are they coming back? How do we do all that stuff, right? So we're going to talk about next week. We're going to look at Paul again, and Paul makes it extremely clear how we do it. So this week, if you're a Christ follower, I want you to evaluate your life. I want you to take a step back and look. What has value? What needs to be elevated? What needs to be decreased? One last thing. Because I've said the whole time there are people in here that probably don't believe what we're saying. You probably don't believe in God. You don't believe in Jesus. And you're not sure about this whole thing. But something tells me that as I've been talking and as you've been hearing who God is and what God has done for you, that very likely you have found yourself nodding along and not finding it as silly as you've found it before and understanding it better than you understood it before. And even now as I'm speaking, you don't know why, but your heart's starting to beat a little faster and you're thinking to yourself, how does he know this is happening? Is he talking to me? What's going on? Let me explain to you what's happening right now. And let me make it so clear. It has nothing to do with me. What's happening right now is the God of the universe is trying to draw you in to a relationship with Him. He's trying to rescue you right now. And so what I want to do is I want to give you a chance to respond. I want to give you a chance to say yes. I want to give you a chance to accept His rescue and to begin a relationship with Him. To begin a relationship with the one who came down to lift you up. So I ask everybody to bow their heads and close their eyes and just simply repeat after me. If you're here today and you say, yes, I didn't really understand all this before, but I want that. I want a relationship with Jesus Christ. And you can simply pray in your hearts as I pray out loud. It's a very simple prayer. Just speak directly to God and say, God, I want a relationship with You. God, I admit that I have made mistakes. I admit that I have tried things my own way. I admit I'm a sinner. And I believe that Your Son paid the price for my mistakes with His life. And I believe because You raised Him from the grave, You can do the same thing with my life. I commit my life right now to You and to following You. Lead me into the life You want for me.
Thanks again for listening to this week's Wellspring Church podcast. For more information, sermon downloads, and more, visit us at wellspringchurch.tv.